It's more like radio.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. You know, one time we had a hail bomb for 12 hours. When it was all over, I walked up. We didn't find one of them, not one stinking big body. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? The whole hill. Smells like... victory.
It's the Cut Print Film Podcast, Episode 10. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hey everyone, welcome to Cut Print Film Episode 10, the big 10. I'm Chris.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Moon Man.
Hey Moon Man.
Hi Moon Man.
Okay, I guess he's not going to say anything else.
Yeah, yeah, he left.
One trick pony.
He has a very limited amount of things he can say.
Still don't have a great vocabulary.
I'm still learning.
So right. What's going on this week, guys?
Well, I saw The Sacrament, Ty West's new horror movie.
T West? Isn't that how you pronounce that?
No, Ty. It's Ty. It's short for Ty, I think. I don't know what his Christian name is.
Maybe it's Tiberius.
But yeah, his latest horror extravaganza came out on iTunes and Amazon Prime. And I think it's on like the cable network's on-demand service.
Yeah, it's on there.
Yeah.
And it comes out in theaters June 6th. So I watched it.
Was it good?
It was good. I'll say it was good. It wasn't great. His first, I don't know, was that his first movie, House of the Devil?
Yeah.
I thought his first movie was the sequel to Cabin Fever, which he does not stand by. Like,
yeah, he sort of disowned that.
But his actual first movie is House of the Devil.
So yeah, how does this stand up against his other movies?
Well, House of the Devil, I would say, is a great horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Innkeepers, I would say, is a good horror movie.
See, I kind of like The Innkeepers more.
Oh, wow. All right.
I don't know. The Innkeepers is funnier, which I guess is not what you should be judging a horror movie by.
It's definitely got more... like, the characters are more likable.
There's more to it. House of the Devil is a great... laid-back horror movie, because it's really just, it's a one-woman show.
And yeah, and it's like a retro, it's like a
throwback.
An homage to retro horror movies. Yeah. But as far as those two movies, this is not as good as those movies.
Okay.
It's slightly lesser than The Innkeepers, which is not saying that it's a bad movie, because I liked all three movies.
Right.
But as far as like being a horror movie... it's not as scary.
How's the pacing? A big criticism of Ty West movies is that they're slow.
No, this is not slow.
Yeah.
It's a little slow to get to the horror, but this is a pretty fast-paced movie. Even the soundtrack's pretty fast. There's, like, dance music.
Yeah, I started watching it, and, like, the opening credits opened to a song by The Knife, which I was not expecting.
I wasn't either.
For a Ty West movie.
Did you not finish it?
I didn't finish it yet. I'll finish it eventually.
That says a lot, I think.
I started very early in the morning, and I was like, I shouldn't be watching this early.
Okay.
It felt weird to watch a horror movie like at 7 a.m.
Did you watch it, Dave?
I haven't seen any of Ty West's movies.
Oh, wow.
And I've always heard great things about them, but I'm kind of a pussy when it comes to horror movies.
Really?
So. I think you'd be able to handle these, because like, they're creepy, but they're not.
These aren't jump scare movies.
They're more
like, and that is... a jump scare is absolute garbage as far as I'm concerned with horror
too
films.
Too many horror movies just rely on, like, people walk in, like, hey, look at this! And it's like, oh. Like Oculus.
Chris, you scared me.
Oculus, which I liked, had a million scenes where, like, someone is standing in perfect silence and someone walks up behind them and it's like, here's that thing you wanted! And it's like, stop it. Stop doing that.
That annoys me. Like, that's not truly scary. That's just, it's a fake
shocking.
Out.
It's always, not scary.
And it's always something that's not scary. Like, there's no payoff.
Right.
It's always like you said, some, like, Uncle Ted is behind you and he has a package for you that was just delivered.
I found this in the mail!
But, when Ty West does a jump scare... it pays off, like, immediately. Like, it's actually going to be something scary on the other end of that.
All right. See, I'll tell you one thing. I watched the trailer for The Sacrament, and I feel like I've seen the whole fucking movie.
Big, big mistake. I don't know why they did that trailer the way they did.
Yeah.
It's the whole movie. It's like, here's what it is. It's a seventh grade essay where your teacher told you to outline everything in the first paragraph.
Yeah,
and then
that's pretty much what it felt
in
like.
In the last paragraph, sum up the entire essay.
Yeah,
like,
So is it a direct retelling of the Jonestown?
Pretty much.
Pretty much. They just didn't use any of the names or anything.
Yeah, and they don't call it Jonestown, and it takes place in modern times. I mean, the whole... I don't want to call it like a framing device, but...
Is there anything like supernatural in it, or is it all just like real world?
It's all straight up realistic horror.
Okay.
Is it actually set up like an episode of Vice?
Yeah.
Like...
It starts out that way.
Okay.
Like, all the handheld camera work is done through, like, a cameraman.
Okay.
A professional cameraman type setup.
Does it have, like, the Vice intro?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
That's kind of cool.
Which Chris did not appreciate.
I'll admit, I started watching the beginning, it sort of, like, it rubbed me the wrong way, because it was, like, in your face, like, this is an ad for Vice, but when I thought about it, it makes sense in the sense that this is the reason why they're filming. And, like, because a lot of, like, Jeff was saying, like, and it's true, a lot of found footage horror movies.
Oh, it's terrible.
They don't give you a reason why people are filming. And so this film actually has a reason. And it also explains why they have good cameras.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of, like, found footage movies, like, I'm a guy with a camera. And it's, like, this super expensive.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Like, everything looks crisp and clear. And there's a reason it looks crisp and clear, because they have.
Yeah, they work for Vice.
Yeah.
That's what was weird about the sound of my voice was, like, the whole thing. Like,
why does it look, like, beautiful?
Yeah. And I don't... Did they even use any of the footage? Like, now I'm thinking back to it. The whole, like, found footage angle of it, I don't even think
that sound of my voice?
Yeah. I don't think they actually did that.
No.
I just remember he makes a big deal out of, whatever it is, like, swallowing that receiver.
Yeah.
So, would you recommend The Sacrament?
Oh, yeah, completely. It's worth seeing, definitely.
Or would you recommend the first 15 minutes of it, Chris?
Yes.
All right. Well, I saw the rest of it, and yes, I would recommend it. It gets batshit crazy at the end, and it's good.
I saw all the non-horror parts, but they were good, so I will definitely finish it.
Yeah, it's a good... It's worth your $10 to rent it on iTunes or whatever.
All right, cool. So what else is going on this week?
Yeah, I hear Chris saw something terrific.
I saw The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man?
Oh. Spider-Man.
Great.
It's his Christian name, Spider-Man. it was not good. I'm not going to call it, like, horrible, just because horrible is a strong word, and, like...
It looks like it's, like, in the 50% range on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's very low on Rotten Tomatoes. It's the worst reviewed Spider-Man movie of all time.
And there's been, like, 13 of them.
Right.
And so, there's seven universes.
Like, this movie is worse than the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3, so that says...
Really? Because that was a piece of shit.
This is worse than that.
That was a horrible movie.
That was embarrassingly awful.
As bad as that movie is, it has a sort of heart to it, whereas this movie is just... straight up commercialism garbage. Like, everything that's wrong with Spider-Man 3, the Sam Raimi one, is wrong with this times a million.
Oh,
like,
shit.
all the flaws of Spider-Man 3, where it was, like, it had too many villains and the plot was convoluted and blah blah blah.
How was Jamie Foxx as Cotton Candy Head?
Jamie Foxx as Electric Man is terrible in this. And
what else is new? He's terrible in everything.
Like, I sort of got fooled into liking Jamie Foxx again after Django Unchained. I was like, oh, Jamie Foxx can...
He was the one thing I didn't like about Django.
I mean, he's the weakest part of that movie, but I didn't dislike him in it.
I liked him in it, but, like, after realizing how horrible he is afterwards, I started thinking about, like, what...
How many better actors could they have cast?
Just a slightly better actor, and how much better would the movie have been?
I remember originally it was going to be, like, Idris Elba, which would have been fantastic. Like, that
would have been the dream casting.
But, he is not good in this. His acting to begin with is not good, but it's so poorly written. Like, this is a badly written movie. Like,
the dialogue's no good. Is that what you're saying?
There's everything Electro says in this movie is fucking generic cliche bad guy stuff, where, like, there's literally a part at the end where he's like, and I will rule everything. It's like, why would you write that?
Why is he doing that? Why does he want to rule everything?
I don't know.
With electricity?
There's
I don't understand.
Motivation. He starts off the movie as this, like, nerdy... It's basically, it's ripped off of Batman Forever.
I was going to say, it sounds like Edward Nygma.
It's literally the plot device from Batman Forever, where Jim Carrey is a nerd.
It feels like, from what I've seen of it, that it's just one of those movies that they even, like, started... filming before they had a full script.
That's
they're writing on the fly.
Pretty much. I'm pretty sure that's what they did with this, because it's bad. It's just it's a ridiculous movie, and it's, and I'll say this, like, I was not as blown away with The Winter Soldier as you guys were.
Yeah.
But this movie made me appreciate that movie more. Like, I've gone back and been like, oh, that was a good movie.
Yeah, that movie knew how to make a comic book movie.
Because, like, yeah, even though that's a comic book movie and it has, like, silly stuff in it, it does it in a...
It's not insulting?
Yeah, it does it in a good way, whereas this movie is, like, pander... I don't know. Maybe it's, like, it's a kid's movie? I don't know how else to explain it.
That's where I'll go back and say again that Jeff's review of Captain America made me like it more, because I realized how harsh I was being on it, like, compared to, like, fucking Batman Forever, where it's like...
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes you get caught up in, like you see several really good movies in a row. Like, we saw Enemy, and then Blue Ruin.
Right.
And then this afternoon, I watched Frozen, Disney's Frozen, for the first time. And for the first 10 minutes, I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, ah, this is bullshit. This is a bunch of shit. But, like, then... I kind of got into the mode of, wait, what are you doing? Let's calm down here, pal. What are you doing? And Disney's Frozen is fantastic.
Good.
That's what I've heard.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Back to Spider-Man 2.
I went into Spider-Man 2 with no... I didn't see the first one with Andrew Garfield. I have not seen it.
Wait, did you go into it with no reservation?
Yes. So I didn't go in wanting to hate it. I just did not like the movie at all. I mean, Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone, they have a lot of chemistry.
Right, and that's written up and down all over the internet. That's the best thing about the first one I read.
Yeah, every review I read of this movie is like, their chemistry is great, which it is, but it's not enough to save the movie.
Yeah.
And Emma Stone is fantastic in the movie. She's very good, but...
Yeah, she's good in everything.
Everything else around them is terrible. And
she plays Gwen Stefani.
Yeah, she plays Gwen Stefani.
Oh, no doubt.
After she leaves, no doubt, and dates Spider-Man.
Perfect.
Looking on a spider web. That was perfect.
Perfect.
That was. Look at that.
So there's one final thing I want to bring up for Spider-Man 2, and this, I think, perfectly illustrates how bad the movie is. And it's a song clip. So this song is in the movie, and I'll set up the scene for you. So
let it go.
Yeah. So this is the scene. Jamie Foxx's character, he becomes Electro by falling into a vat of electric eels, which is, I think, scientifically accurate. If you fall into electric eel pits, you become Electric Man. So he's
that's what happened to Ernest, and Ernest goes to jail.
Oh. After he becomes Electro, he wakes up, and he's got all this power, and he goes out, and he's in the middle of Times Square. And all these cops show up, and they start shooting at him, and then Spider-Man shows up. And earlier in the movie, Electro, before he's Electro, encounters Spider-Man, and he's like obsessed with Spider-Man. So he's like, oh, Spider-Man's my friend, but he's not. So basically, this song cue acts as Jamie Foxx's thought process. So so play the song cue for everyone.
All right.
He lied to me, he shot at me, he hates on me, he shoots
me. So yeah. Electricity. It picks up.
Pretty good.
Wait. So yeah, at the end of the song...
That was great, by the way.
At the end of the song, there is literally the line...
Is that a Disturbed video?
Let the body sit up.
There is literally a line to the song where he goes, he is my enemy. And when the song ends, Electro starts fighting Spider-Man. So this movie...
This is for children, then.
This movie's idea of setting up Electro's motivation is to play this stupid fucking song.
It's right out of, like, 1998, by the way. This is, like, 98 nu metal.
Because they realized both the screenplay and Jamie Foxx's acting couldn't convey what he's thinking. So they literally made up a fucking song where they say what he's thinking.
That is lazy.
It's like having a scene in your movie where your character's like, I'm gonna have a sandwich. And it's, like, rolling through his head. And then he has a sandwich. Like, you shouldn't need a fucking song to illustrate what your character is thinking.
Good God.
So... That alone is like, all right, this movie sucks. So, 10 out of 10 for Spider-Man 2.
All right.
Ernest goes to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man goes to camp.
This thing, I don't know. When they released the teaser with that scene with Electro fighting Superman, I was like...
Superman.
Not Superman, but the other fucking comic book guy. I don't
Jeff
know.
Lizman,
I'm 30 dimension. Years old. I don't know. I don't know my ass from a hole in the ground with comic books. When they released that teaser for Electro fighting Spider-Man. It looked like a video game.
It's bad. It's just...
Like, this was not something I don't know. I couldn't tell what the fuck was going on. It looked like a cutscene from a video game.
There's so much goofy shit. Like, Spider-Man has the Spider-Man song as his ringtone for his fucking phone in this movie.
Helmeta.
And,
What, like the original
Spider-Man? Yeah, the cartoon, like, Spider-Man? That song, that's his fucking ringtone for the movie.
Mm.
And then there's a part at the end, this is the last thing I'll say, where Electro is slamming Spider-Man into these pipes, and every pipe resonates for a note for the itsy bitsy spider.
Ew.
So, good night, everyone.
Jesus Christ.
And the movie made like $92 billion over the weekend. So,
Was it a box office success? Yeah.
It made a lot of money.
Spider-Man always does well at the box office.
Spider-Man is huge with kids, so parents will... Kids will be like,
maybe that's who they're making the movie for.
I guess. Maybe I'm judging it too harshly. Yeah. Maybe it's for kids. I don't know.
It's the Frozen thing again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, no, but Frozen's animated. I understand.
And so is a majority of Spider-Man.
Yeah, there aren't really real people flipping through the city in Spider-Man, unfortunately.
All right, good point. Fair enough.
And I'll say 99% of the movie is for kids, but then it has this ridiculously dark ending, which is from the comics. I'll give it that. I won't give it away. Spoiler. But it's from the comics, but it doesn't fit the tone of the movie.
Oh.
And
so
that
it's completely
Spider-Man
unearned.
Gets a sex change?
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds right.
And that is the last thing. I said that this is the last thing I'll say about Spider-Man like 5 times, but that is the last thing because I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Right. I don't either.
All right. We got our Star Wars actors. Actually, that was like a long time ago now. But
no, it was this week.
Beginning of the week.
It was like Monday.
Yeah.
We haven't had a chance to discuss it other than texting each other. Oh, man. Sick. Awesome.
Yeah. Shit. I spelled sick. S-I-Q-U-E.
Yeah, I was like, Max von Sydow's LOL.
He's a bad guy.
I'm loving this cast.
Yeah, I do too. I'm not even the biggest Star Wars fan.
No, I am not either.
You're pretty big.
I am pretty big. I've been working my shoulders out strictly. Every day is shoulder day for me.
Adam Driver has been in the news for a while as he's going to be in it.
Because he's so weird looking.
So that didn't surprise me, but Oscar Isaac was like...
Well, Adam Driver looks like a miniature version of the giant from Big Fish.
Adam Driver looks like young Abe Lincoln, basically.
Yeah.
Abe Lincoln traveled through time as a young man.
He's quite a disturbing looking guy.
And then he peed on the girl from Girls. I forget her name.
Oh,
Nina Dunham.
I didn't see that episode. There's
an episode where he pees on her in the shower.
As a joke.
Oh, just for a goof?
Yeah.
All right. But yeah, I like the fact that Oscar Isaac's in this thing.
He is a fantastic actor.
Mr. Llewyn Davis himself.
I almost feel like he's too good of an actor for Star Wars. Like, it's like...
I don't know. Like, I don't hate the Star Wars movies.
I don't either, but it's like he could be doing better things. Because he's probably going to be tied up for Star Wars for the next, 10 years.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but... He's like, I really hope he plays a villain. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Because,
I've read that he's playing, the Han Solo type character in this.
That doesn't excite me.
Apparently, Adam Driver is the villain, which is kind of weird.
I totally see him.
I mean, he's weird
villain.
Looking, but I can't picture him as, a villain.
But I do like Oscar. I like what you're saying, Dave, about Oscar Isaac playing, an ambiguous type villain, like he was in Drive. You didn't know if this guy was going to be, a piece of shit or if he was. Gonna be an okay guy.
Exactly. He has that tone.
He could be menacing
where
but you can't tell.
That's sort of what Han Solo is in the first Star
Wars. That's a good point.
He's like this roguish he starts out as a smuggler and they just hire him.
That's a good point. But with Han Solo though, Harrison Ford does not look like a bad guy.
Yeah, but keep in mind back then.
Unless you're watching What Lies Beneath.
Back when Star Wars came out, which I believe was 1992, the first Star Wars, Harrison Ford...
I don't know if you're correct in that.
I'll have to look it up. Harrison Ford was not as, well-known as he is now, so, I mean...
Everyone is saying Adam Driver is going to be the villain, but I just think that's too obvious. I would not be surprised if he's the main good guy in this.
With J.J. Abrams... I'm sure we won't know the fucking plot of the movie until the night before it comes out, because he loves keeping things secret.
Yeah, well, luckily, Kathleen Kennedy, the CEO of, I guess it's Lucasfilm, she's like, no, we're not going to do that with this movie.
She says that, but they're still sort of... I'm shocked they actually announced this cast like they did.
Who else was announced?
John, how do you say his name? Boyega? He was in Attack the Block.
Mm.
Daisy Ridley, who is not real well known. This is like her first big movie. Adam Driver, Oscar Isaacs. Andy Serkis of Gollum and Ape fame.
Domhnall Gleeson.
Yes, who I only know from Anna Karenina.
Oh.
That's the only thing I've seen him in.
From what?
Anna Karenina, how do you say it?
Anna Karenina?
Anna Karenina.
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 Yeah.
Thank you.
He's fucking... I mean, I loved Frank and I loved About Time. I recommended that movie.
That's right.
He's,
you did. That, yeah.
He's a good fucking actor. So, but he's definitely going to play like a...
good, nice guy.
A comic relief kind of guy. Jar Jar Binks, I think.
Perfect. Well, he was beloved.
And then...
the Irish Jar Jar Binks.
I don't like that. As an Irish American, I
would do that impression. That's racist. I don't want to embarrass anybody.
And and finally Max von Sydow, which oddly enough is the thing that excited me the most of this casting, just because he's
a great character actor.
Like, yeah, he's like a legend, and like he will seemingly live forever because I think he's been 70 for the last 25 years, so he'll.
I don't understand it. Yeah. I do not understand it. He's like your grandfather. Like, you were born and your grandfather was old, and now you're 30 and your grandfather's still old.
So I'm trying to put a plot together for this Star Wars movie, and I'm thinking that what's his name? The old guy?
Max von Sydow?
Yeah. I'm thinking
Yoda.
Yeah. Yoda's pretty old. He's like 800, I think.
They're gonna pull some kind of like Voldemort angle where they bring back the Emperor, and I think he's gonna play him.
I don't think they're gonna have, because the actor who played the Emperor is still. Oh, I mean, you mean like the Emperor's possessing someone else?
Yeah, kind of. Right. Because what do you do?
Yeah, they kind of wrapped it up pretty nicely, didn't they?
Yeah.
This is my guess, and it's a very weak guess, is that the young people are somehow young relatives of the original cast, and they're gonna go from there. That's all I got.
Yeah, but there's like a deep Sith mythology.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense because I hang out with the sons and daughters of all the people my dad was friends with growing up.
Were they rebel fighters who destroyed the Death Star?
No, they were not. They played Little League and rode our bikes together.
The only thing that there could be is Darth Vader was secretly training a Sith apprentice that we didn't know about.
Right.
That could be the only threat here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're fired.
I'm willing.
You're fired.
Because it's set up.
It's the Sith Apprentice on NBC.
I didn't know what you were doing.
I thought you were doing like an Arnold Schwarzenegger impression.
You're fired. That's my Donald Trump. Darth Trump. You're fired.
But there's like a rule. So there's only two Sith. There's the Master and the Apprentice. Until the Apprentice kills the Master, that's how it works. And they both tell me
way more than I knew.
I don't remember any of this from Star Wars.
All right. Well, I was a Star Wars geek.
All right. Good. Well, we need one of them on this.
I love Star Wars as a teen.
Which,
because that was when they brought it back.
You mean the
re-release?
You mean the original trilogy?
Not the prequels. No.
Well, I remember when they brought the prequels back. I feel like I was like 13.
And that's all I was like 12. So that's all I did was collect Star Wars toys, read Star Wars shit.
I was never into Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're talking about the original trilogy. I appreciate it as like a film for its time. Like, it's groundbreaking, but I could never get into it for some reason. I like Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
More than I like the first one. I don't know. It's no Phantom Menace.
I actually didn't watch any of them until I was in my early 20s.
What?
Yeah, and then what I did, because I had waited so long, I watched them in order of how they're supposed to be. So I watched Phantom Menace.
Did yourself a disservice there.
Well, that's what I understand now, but at the time I didn't know that. So I watched Phantom Menace, and then, what is the next one? Attack of the Clones.
I don't give a fuck.
And then
Revenge of the Sith.
Then Revenge of the Sith came out in theaters, so I went to the theater by myself and watched that.
It's, aw.
Yeah.
Lonely.
That's why I got to hear. Yeah. And then I watched the original three at home.
I remember when they re-released the original ones with the new goofy cartoon scenes
and
added into it.
Those are the ones I watched.
I saw those in theaters.
I must have watched Star Wars in the worst possible way I could have. So maybe that's why I don't enjoy it.
That's all you can get it now. Like the
yeah, he like hide. I mean, you need the old version on VHS.
Yeah, there's VHS in the original, but you can't get the original quote unquote.
I'm sure Jeff could get them if he wanted to.
Yeah, he's got connections.
Yes.
But that later trilogy came out and totally ruined it for me, where I was like, I'm so mad that that's considered canon, because I feel like they should go back and redo those movies. They're
that
so
ain't
bad.
Gonna happen.
And I've read things that, like, kids who were young when those came out really like those movies, and it's kind of weird. It's like they have nostalgia for the prequels, which is kind of sad.
I've never heard anybody say that.
I haven't heard anyone say that, but I've seen it on the internet.
Because here's the thing. Those movies, the Star Wars movies, when they came out, they were critically acclaimed.
Right.
Everyone loved them.
Well, and I don't like these movies, but the prequels actually got good reviews when they came out, which is shocking when you think about it.
I just think that's like a George Lucas suck fest, though, where nobody wants to ruffle any feathers, so they want their flow of Star Wars toys to keep coming in so that they can...
There's a lot of money to be made by saying these are great films.
And if George Lucas was sending me Star Wars toys, I would say that was a good fucking movie, too.
Yeah, so would I. I mean, come on.
So please send all Star Wars toys to Cut Print Film at Dave's house.
Would you consider... So none of the Star Wars movies are 10 out of 10s for you? They're not perfect movies?
No.
I think the highest I'll go is 9 out of 10 for Empire Strikes Back.
I'd say 7.
Yeah, all the other... Of the original trilogy gets a 7 for me.
I don't know. The
maybe even what's the third one? Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
That probably gets a 6 because that's a goofy, ridiculous movie with Ewoks and shit like that.
living teddy bears.
Yes, living toys
for the kids.
On screen. Yeah.
Just because of my nostalgic bias, I would just give them all 9s because they kind of changed
Phantom
my
Menace?
Life. I would no.
Phantom Menace was fucking terrible.
Those things do not exist.
Are you just talking about the original trilogy?
Yeah, the first three.
I'd give the first two 8s and Return of the Jedi 7. Because they're not bad movies at all.
No, they're not.
Not even
they're
close.
Just,
they're actually
I
fantastic.
I just can't get into them. I don't know.
Because, I don't know, it's tough for you because you watched it post, like...
9/11.
Yeah.
Kind of.
We hadn't learned to laugh again.
The CGI revolution had occurred already, but like I was watching them before, like when Spawn was out in theater, so they were still impressive to me.
Yeah,
and I kind of wish that they would just go make more Star Wars movies with that same shitty technology,
like from the original trilogy.
Like I wish J.J. Abrams would use like mocap and stuff.
That's sort of how I felt with Prometheus. Like I wished like the ship looked like that grungy,
and it was filmed like tighter.
Yeah. I wish it looked like that.
Yeah, you don't need to do those wide ass shots showing like look what we drew.
Yeah,
like, oh great,
look at what some guys in a computer office made for him.
And I feel like that's the issue with modern movies is like they go way too wide and big.
Nothing's like amazing anymore. It's like, oh, a computer did that.
That's a good point.
Like the original, like the Star Wars movies and like the early Spielberg movies. It's like, oh, someone took the time to build this, or they painted it like a matte painting,
or it was even like, I don't know how this is happening.
Yeah, exactly.
It's blowing my face off.
Yeah. Now it's just like, oh, that's a computer. Someone did that on a computer. It looks like
hey guys, I have a joke for you.
Oh, that seems like an inappropriate time.
What is it, Moon Man?
Are you ready?
Yeah,
I guess.
I guess we're ready.
Why was 6 afraid of 7?
I don't know.
Because 7 was a very frightening movie. Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha.
Oh, well, that just sucked all the energy out of the room.
Thanks, Moon Man.
I think we should go to break.
That's all I have to say about that.
All right, we're going to go to break.
Yeah, on that note.
For 14 years, I've been a whore for the advertising industry. The only way I could save myself now is if I start firebombing.
The Cut Print Film Podcast will be right back after these messages.
Hey, Jeff, it's time for a commercial break.
All right, let's go to Chris and Chopper Cut Print Film.
Hold on, let me set it up here. Hey, Chris, can you hear us?
What? I can't hear you. I'm coming live from the Cut Print Film News Chopper. I wanted to tell you guys to go to adamandeve.com. Adam and Eve is an adult store. You can shop erotic adult toys and novelties.
Chris, did you say Adam and Steve?
No.
I think we lost Chris.
We'll have to check in on him later.
Anyway, go to adamandeve.com and type in deal48 in the promo code and get 50% off one item.
And free shipping.
And you'll get 3 adult DVDs and a free gift.
I wonder what the free gift is.
Probably a dildo.
Mmm.
Lube.
Hey, smokers. You stink. I'm not talking about your character. That's a given. I'm talking about your clothes. It's time to kick the butts and move over to something more pleasant. I'm talking about e-cigs from Smokeless Image. They're cheaper than cigarettes, don't smell, and are available in a wide variety of flavors ranging from mints, fruits, desserts, or the traditional tobacco flavors if that's what you want. Simply go to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke for all your vaping needs. That's tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke.
All right, so we're back.
Hey, we're better than ever.
We come back in on my raucous laughter.
You missed the real jokes during that commercial
break. Yeah, we save all our A material for when we're off air.
So Star Wars is not a perfect movie, a 10 out of 10.
No, it is not.
So this is our 10th podcast.
Yes, it is.
And we've decided to tell you the 10 out of 10s for the 10-10-10 podcast.
You are going out of the fucking, out of the orbit.
I don't think 10-10-10 applies because it's 10-10
wins.
It's not October and it's not the year 2010.
Yes, it is.
What?
So my goal for this podcast is to maybe we can narrow down what the cut print film greatest movie of all time is.
Oh, shit.
Oh, that's going to be hard.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think it's Bee Season.
What?
I don't know what that is.
It's Simon Birch.
Just spit across the room on that one. All
right. No, not Bee Season for anyone else?
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Okay.
So we've all compiled lists of 10 out of 10s.
Yes.
Right.
And I'm sure they all have pretty much the same fucking movies on them.
Hopefully not. Hopefully there's not much overlapping.
So yeah, how should we do this? Because I don't want to like just read a list because that's kind of dull.
Yeah. And I don't have much of a list. I only did 4 movies. I did the top 4 movies on my list of 10.
Don't give me your number one yet. Cause
I won't. I won't. Believe me. My Girl too.
Is that a movie?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I went and saw that in the theater with my stepmom, and now we don't speak.
You're my girl, too.
Okay.
He says that at the end of the movie.
So, Chris, give me a perfect movie.
All right. I'm going to find a
throw it out there.
The Maltese Falcon is a perfect movie.
That's a good pick.
I tried to pick things that just aren't from like the last 10 years because I don't want to sound like an idiot.
What year was that made?
I didn't write that down, so I'm a complete idiot.
Throw a guess.
30s.
Okay.
30s.
So I actually was having this conversation with myself last night.
That's odd. You take some medication for that.
Any movie made like pre-1965, I don't really...
It's 1941, by the way.
I was wrong.
I don't really... They're hard to watch, first of all.
See, but this is a movie that's not hard to watch, and that's why I kind of include it in that list. Like, it's different than those other movies.
I agree with you, though. Like,
yeah.
I definitely know what you're saying.
Those early 20th century movies are sometimes... they're a chore sometimes to watch.
They're very point-and-shoot, basically. It's just directors just
they drag, though. Like, plot-wise, the music's
too... Let's go attention span. There was nothing else to do at the time.
It was either go to the movies or don't go to the movies and be depressed.
Yeah.
Those were the options.
And everybody actually lived in black and white.
Really?
Yeah.
More suits, 24/7.
Very boring.
But I mean, I can recognize the beauty of like early cinema. I guess we're trying to say the perfect tens of modern cinema.
All right, then I'll go. All right,
which is 1965.
I would say
beyond.
A movie like Chinatown is a 10 out of 10.
Yeah,
is that your only Roman Polanski movie on the list?
Actually, yes, it is. Or The Conversation, Francis Ford Coppola's Conversation.
What a great movie!
Is
that
a
10 out of 10. I don't know if I agree with your 10 rating,
right.
But that is excellent.
I don't think
movie.
I would give either of those 10s. Like,
really?
I love those movies, but...
They're 8 and 9s
really?
In my book.
Okay.
But yeah, my God, The Conversation is...
Is phenomenal.
I just can't say enough nice things about it.
Because here's like, as I was making my list, I kind of realized I was doing this to myself, where I was self-imposing this rule that only one... like. A director can only have one perfect movie, because if they have to have a best movie, and if And if the movies below that are worse than it, how are they both tens? You know what I mean?
I have three Martin Scorsese movies on my list.
Hugo.
Yeah, Hugo.
Kundun.
Kundun. And a documentary he made about going to Italy.
I mean, there are some anomalies.
I think Martin Scorsese is immune to that. And also, I would say Stanley Kubrick is immune to that.
Oh,
all right, let's do it like this. How many...
I would say Kubrick is the anomaly.
Okay. How many Kubrick movies would you say are 10 out of 10s?
Two.
Which are?
The Shining.
Okay.
And 2001.
All right. I disagree with both of those.
I have The Shining actually on my list, but not 2001.
And The Shining is my favorite horror movie of all time, and that's a 9.5. But here's my problem with The Shining. Her name's Shelley Duvall, and she's got a big set of chompers. And her acting.
Can someone's teeth really disqualify?
No, it's not her. I'm just kidding. But it is her acting. I think her acting is.
I don't know. I think her acting fits that movie because she's supposed to be hysterical and like.
She's a horrible actress.
She's horrendous.
I wouldn't say horrible. Horrible that isn't much.
That she's is a Spider-Man 2 of an actress.
It's a heinous performance. I do not like her performance in that movie. I think Danny is good. I think, obviously, Jack Nicholson is fantastic.
Right.
And Scatman Crothers is at the top of his acting game.
So what what do you guys have as the most recent movie on your list? Like,
well, Dave and I might have the same one.
It's There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There Will Be Blood that's my most on my list. But I also have I have Zodiac on my list. Mm. I think Zodiac is a 10 out of 10.
Really?
That's a 9.5. I fucking love Zodiac.
I think Zodiac is David Fincher's best movie, and that says a lot because I love all of his movies except Benjamin Button.
I didn't think about what the best David Fincher movie is. I love Zodiac, but I don't think that's a 10.
I think Zodiac is fantastic.
It's a great movie.
It's a crowning achievement of filmmaking.
When we were throwing this list idea around, the 10 out of 10 list around, There Will Be Blood was the first film
that
popped up in my head.
So would you guys have, because The Dissolve had her as a perfect movie.
No.
I have that on here as like her, question mark? See, and no, her is not a...
I feel like it's too soon.
It's a terrific movie.
And that brings us to the article that Francis Ford Coppola was quoted in.
Yeah.
Who did that? IndieWire, I guess it was?
No, it was Empire.
Okay, wrong.
He did an interview with Empire.
Empire Strikes Back, man.
He was quoted as saying that, I'm going to, you know, sum up
paraphrase.
Yeah, a little paraphrasing.
He loves touching balls.
I don't think that's what he was saying. I don't know. You must have been reading a different magazine. He said that maybe we shouldn't judge films until they've been around for 10 years minimum.
So did he mean judge entirely? As in we shouldn't write reviews after a movie? Or?
Yeah, and I went back. I read the article. I read the interview, and he wasn't like
it was just
saying,
an offhand
like,
comment.
This is ridiculous that we're reviewing movies as soon as they come out. We should wait 10 years. No, it was just – he was like just theorizing. Like maybe we shouldn't judge them. I mean, I
guess there's some merit in that.
There is, because
I think 10 years is a long time.
It is a long time, but I wrote an article that's going to be on cutprintfilm.com this week that was inspired by Francis Ford Coppola's quote there, where I went back and I looked at the top four Oscar winners for 2004, and I think Francis might have a point.
Really?
Because we fucked up big time in 2004.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm interested to read that.
Yeah, we'll get... That's another topic altogether, but...
Okay, so...
But bringing up Francis Ford Coppola, The Godfather Part 1 is on my list as being a 10 out of 10.
Godfather 1 and 2 are both on my list.
Wait, I want to go back to her and say that it hasn't
been... I won't
been
have
long,
it.
It hasn't been long enough.
It just came out.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
It is,
but... It's not a perfect movie.
I don't know.
I don't think it's a perfect movie, but I do have to let it sit. I can't like pass judgment on that.
Let's come back in 10 years to Dave's basement and we'll talk about her.
All right.
Okay, back to FFC.
Yeah. Yeah, Godfather Part 1 for me, I like it better than Part 2. I'd say Part 2 is 9.5. Only because there's a character named Hyman Roth, and I just can't stop laughing at that throughout the whole movie.
I like 1 more than 2 as well, but I think 1 and 2 are... One in the Godfather series, at least part one and two, they actually feel like they're all one long movie.
Right.
So it's hard to judge them separately because, and part three doesn't count. So
the Godfather two.
Here's the thing with part three. It's a good movie.
Part three has an amazing story,
but it doesn't hold up.
Part three has a problem, and that problem is Sofia Coppola, who is an okay director, but a atrocious actress.
The Godfather two is not a perfect movie. It is too disjointed plot-wise.
There's a lot of that. That's why I couldn't consider that a 10.
And Godfather Part 2 is like a great novel in movie form.
Yeah. That would be it's much better. Like, the screenplay is probably a whole lot better than like seeing it fleshed out on film.
I would still consider it a 10, but that's just me.
I think Al Pacino's off in that movie. Like, really? He doesn't fit the role.
He's a lot colder in that. I don't know.
Not that he's
which
cold.
Which I like.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be an asshole, but it seems like he's just too fucking short to play that role.
That's a weird assessment.
Well, they're like Sicilian descendants. The Sicilians are not known for being tall people.
They're not Vikings.
But he's just not an imposing character at all. And that, I don't know.
I think that's
just
part of his character.
He seems a little goofy.
Like, he's so powerful,
yeah,
but he's
not
like this
physically imposing.
This
just
short and stature man who's wearing like lifts in his boots.
There is a great scene in The Godfather 2 when he slams the door in his face.
Yes, that is, I'd say that's the pinnacle scene of Godfather 2.
I mean, you're not expecting it, and it just, like, I won't ruin The Godfather 2 for anybody.
Yeah, don't. My wife has not seen it, and I want to share that with her.
Yeah, neither is mine. But that's a 9.5. Okay. I don't want to get into what I think the greatest movie of all time is.
That's a different topic from a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, that's like a...
Like, that's a personal... Yeah, that's
The 10 is what I'm saying. Like... A Francis Ford Coppola movie for me is the 10.
Oh.
And it's Apocalypse Now.
That's a great movie.
Is that on your list?
No.
It's not on my list either.
I think it's a great movie, but...
Yeah, I don't think it's a 10, but it's a great
movie. I would say
that
movie is more disjointed than Godfather Part 2.
But
that movie is a series of scenes.
Yeah, it's vignettes.
It's not a straight movie.
You got Robert Duvall screaming on the beach.
And it's a great movie, don't get me wrong. I love Apocalypse Now, but... And I love the director's cut too. The one
redo.
But would you say that the disjointedness is a symbolic thing that
it's Kubrick? So yes, it's Kubrick. So yes, I would. Really, you disagree?
No, it's not Kubrick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're thinking of Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah,
which
is
also disjointed.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, they feel like they're on the same level.
My apologies.
But Apocalypse Now is a better film than Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, come on. No. Come on now.
Full Metal Jacket is half of a good movie. It's the first half.
No, I was going to say the second half.
Okay.
With Animal Mother.
Okay, so here I go. I'm going to say that Apocalypse Now is not the cut print film greatest movie of all time.
No, but it is a great movie.
The first movie I wrote down was 2001, and you guys don't think that that's 10?
I think it's a 9.5.
Yeah, I agree with Chris.
It's a phenomenal
movie. Beautiful
movie
too. But... It's beautiful to look at.
To think that movie came out in 1968...
Makes you think about it for, like, hours after you watch it.
That, like, when you think about 1968 and that movie, it's like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And that's what puts it at a 10 for me, is that it was so groundbreaking for the time.
No, it definitely is.
And it did things for cinema that still people can't, like, surpass.
Right.
So... That's a 10 for me.
Yeah.
Do either of you have any Spielberg movies on your list?
Just E.T.
No.
I have Jaws. I think Jaws
Wait,
is a
we've
10
already
out of
10. Agreed that E.T. is a 10 out of 10.
Yes, it is.
I guess.
But it's not on my list.
That's going to be the cut print film greatest movie of all time.
Probably. That is a great, great movie.
I would say Jaws is a 10 out of 10.
And I expected somebody to say Jaws, but
Jaws is a fantastic movie. I can't think of a single flaw with Jaws, honestly.
I would say the flaw with Jaws is its poppiness. And it
is that really
doesn't...
a flaw, though? I mean, that's like...
It doesn't have the gravity that a 10 out of 10
It's not about important issues, if that's what you mean. You know, shark attacks are not...
And maybe that's
what about the mayor's shirt? I'm sorry, his suit.
His anchor jacket. I wish I could find that, because I would wear that every day.
So would I.
So
to the unemployment line.
Are you guys familiar with the AFI's top 100 list, the American Film Institute?
Yes. Oh, I thought you meant the band AFI.
Yeah. I didn't even know they had 100 songs.
Fire Inside.
Yeah, that band.
So they put out this list. I don't know how often they revise
update
it.
Every few years.
10 years, maybe?
Yeah, probably.
It's a 10K, so they probably do it every 10 years.
Everything's 10.
That's right.
Their number one movie is Citizen Kane.
Nah, stop it.
That's on my list, but I don't think that's the best movie ever made.
Can we stop with Citizen Kane? Can we just fucking stop it?
And that's where I go
it's
back.
It's 2014. You're telling me nothing better has come out
since Citizen Kane.
Get your head out of your asses.
That said, do you like Citizen Kane?
Yeah, it's a good movie.
I think it's fantastic.
It's a good movie.
That's another movie that, for its time, much like 2001, like the shit that Orson Welles does in Citizen Kane.
That is a modern movie that came out
over 50 years ago. So I would say that's a 10, but I don't think it's the best movie ever made. I think that it's ridiculous to think that's the best movie ever made.
It's a Wonderful Life is on my list.
That's a great movie.
It is. I would say that's a 10, honestly.
Yeah, but it goes back to the modern. There needs to be a divide.
Like a cutoff?
Yeah, where we're talking about two totally different things. It's like, those aren't movies the way movies are movies now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I have an older one on my list. It's Walt Disney's Pinocchio. I think that is a 10 out of 10.
I didn't even consider a cartoon.
Yeah, I don't have any Disney movies.
Yeah, but you gotta imagine, like, that movie looks amazing. That whole whale sequence where he swallows Geppetto. I mean,
I fucking loved that movie as a kid.
That movie is gorgeous.
That's my favorite Disney movie.
And there's, like, it's, oh man, it's just like, it's a morality tale done really, really dark for a children's movie.
That fucking scene where they go to Pleasure Island, that still haunts me to this day.
It looks great. The songs are fantastic. I don't know. Pinocchio, to me, is a 10 out of 10. It's far better than Snow White, which...
What about Saving Mr. Banks? Is it better than that?
it's a little better than that.
Do you guys have any Hitchcock on your list?
I thought about Vertigo.
Vertigo is on my list.
Yeah, I thought about it. Vertigo is my favorite Hitchcock movie.
Even though I like Psycho probably the most of all Hitchcock movies, Vertigo,
it's not a 10.
Vertigo is a better movie.
Vertigo is closer to a 10 in my book than Psycho is.
So, is Schindler's List on either of you?
Nah.
I kind of wanted to put it on there, but I didn't.
I don't feel like it is a perfect movie, but it's like the number 5 movie on the...
I completely disagree with that. And that's a really, really good movie.
Schindler's List is fantastic. And it
Ralph Fiennes is unbelievable.
And it sounds like a dick thing to say, but like I think that movie gets higher up because it's all about such an important issue.
Right.
And I don't want to...
It's number 8, so...
I don't want to besmirch that issue because it is an important issue, but it's such a heavy...
Yeah, but I mean, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas is about that same issue, and that movie's not very good.
But Schindler's List is like this huge Spielberg movie, like... You can't be like, I don't think that movie's that great, because you'd sound like an asshole. And,
right.
And for the record, I think that movie is great, because I don't want to sound like an asshole.
That's right. It's an excellent movie, but no, it is not a 10.
It's a phenomenal movie, but it has problems. It has some problems.
The Jews.
Well, that's not the problem Chris and I were thinking
that's
of.
That's not what I was thinking of, but okay.
That was a joke, people. Trying to lighten it up in here.
Yeah, with Jew massacre jokes.
So you guys think that a director can have more than one?
Oh, absolutely.
Perfect
movie? Yeah. Yes, I do.
If they're a really good director, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say like, Kubrick and Scorsese.
So what is your Kubrick 10 then?
Oh, I don't have a Kubrick 10. I'm just saying like
more than one
great movies.
So I'll just for my Scorsese angle, because I'm a Scorsese fanboy, I guess I'm the only one.
Scorsese 5.
Scores head.
I have Goodfellas, I have Raging Bull, and I have Taxi Driver.
Damn.
I have Raging Bill on my list, but that's totally different.
Like I can
that's
see,
your neighbor.
I can see everyone not liking Goodfellas as much as I do, but...
I think Goodfellas is the best out of those three movies.
I think Raging Bull is a 10 out of 10 without doubt. I can't think of a flaw in that movie. And same thing with Taxi Driver, which is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, they are great movies.
God, yeah, I don't know
Scorsese is just...
I think he's the greatest living filmmaker. That's my take.
By the way, he was
killed.
No, breaking news: Martin Scorsese was killed
in a helicopter accident while doing an Adam and Eve ad.
I don't know. Like, so you're saying the greatest living filmmaker, but when
the
I
greatest
think,
living still working filmmaker.
P.S. He was snubbed in 2004, 10 years ago, for a far lesser movie.
Was it The Aviator?
Well, that's what he directed, and he was
in 2004. Yeah.
So,
I feel like Paul. I'm more excited when a Paul Thomas Anderson movie is coming out than when a Scorsese movie is coming out.
Me too. No. I am too.
No.
No. Sorry.
Because to me,
sorry, gentlemen.
When
no.
Paul Thomas Anderson films come out, that's like an event, just like when Quentin Tarantino movies comes out.
Paul,
it's like a. Yeah. For me, in my like mind, that is like a big
fucking deal. I would even go
deal.
With Quentin Tarantino and say I'm more excited about that than a Scorsese movie at this point.
Paul Thomas Anderson is a great director, but everything he does is borrowed from other directors.
You can say that about Quentin Tarantino.
And yeah,
you have to say that
actually,
about Quentin Tarantino.
Both Quentin Tarantino and Paul Thomas Anderson are fantastic directors, but everything they do is borrowed from other filmmakers. And I think Scorsese is wholly original, and so that's why I would always put him above those two. Like, Boogie Nights is a great movie, but it borrows so heavily from Scorsese, it's painful.
It also borrows from Robert Altman.
Well, pretty much every Paul Thomas Anderson movie borrows from Robert Altman, because Paul Thomas Anderson is a huge Robert Altman fan.
You can tell with the tracking shot. Yeah. Well, that's also a Scorsese trademark. But
yeah, I'm not putting those directors down at all. They're great directors, but everything they do,
well, we're never going to get them on the podcast now, so
they're right outside too, and they heard this and left. They carpooled here.
Did you guys have any Malick on your lists?
I'm not the biggest Terrence Malick fan.
I like Terrence Malick, but I don't have any. I think the closest would be Thin Red Line. I would give a 9.5.
I have the Thin Red Line on my list because that movie is just fucking,
it's fantastic.
It's insane. Lee good.
It's insanely long too.
It is.
But it's like if you have the time to watch it and can pay attention for a long time.
If you have a 4-day weekend, put that in.
Yeah, if you got like a 2-week vacation or work, it's good.
There's something about war movies for me when they're done well, like
that's because there's so much weight.
They rise to the top.
Like
of movies.
I think like that came out the same year as Saving Private Ryan. They were sort
of
like,
oh god, that,
I think that's a better movie than
Saving
Private
better.
Ryan.
It's far better. Saving Private Ryan, as good as that is, that's like eating a Snickers bar compared to eating a steak. Like the Thin Red Line's a steak.
Yeah.
It's, and
there's more.
Do I need to explain this analogy?
Yeah, there's very little meat in Snickers bars.
Is this metaphor anymore? Yeah, if you have meat in your Snickers bar, you should return it to the Little League desk.
Fucking
the concession stand.
Nico De Nolte is so great in the Thin Red Line that it's mind blowing.
I think that was the last movie he made before he became a caveman.
Is that the last movie he was in?
No.
What? No.
Like, what has he been in?
Nick Nolte?
He was in Noah.
He was in The Hulk.
Was he in Noah?
He was the voice of one of the rock monsters.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, he was one of the monsters of rock.
He played the ship.
I know he was in Warrior. He was UFC dad.
Oh, yeah, he was in Warrior.
Yeah, he was.
What Tarantino movie is a 10 out of 10?
None of them.
Maybe Pulp Fiction? Maybe.
I got maybe Pulp Fiction on my list, too.
It's a hard maybe.
It's not my favorite Tarantino movie, but
it's probably his,
it's the
I
best.
Think it's his best movie. Best
considering movie. It came out in fucking 1994.
All right, I got a 10 out of 10. It's like out of left field.
Okay.
Tell me what you think.
Okay.
I'm going to throw it out there.
B-Season?
Ghostbusters.
I came close to putting that on my list. That is a near...
Hold on, you didn't let me finish. 2.
Ghostbusters 3, the screenplay yet to be produced.
Seriously, Ghostbusters, I think that's a 10 out of 10.
I wasn't a Ghostbusters person.
I was thinking, like, I had very...
Well, this partnership's over.
I had very little... do you guys have any comedies on your list? Like, is it...
That's it.
That's
Ghostbusters.
I have Royal Tenenbaums. Like,
Royal
Tenenbaums.
I thought about Royal Tenenbaums, like, but I've said so much about it, right. Like, enough
of
the Royal Tenenbaums.
You don't want to keep bringing up the same movies, but the only comedy besides... Would you consider It's a Wonderful Life a comedy?
Not really.
No.
It has comedic elements. Yeah.
That is a good movie, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as Ghostbusters go, like when I was looking at it, I was looking at, for 10 out of 10s, story, music, a realized world. Is it wholly original? And for me, Ghostbusters fits all those criteria.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna agree with Jeff, and I'm gonna say Ghostbusters is a 10 out of 10.
Thank you.
Ghostbusters,
thank you, everybody.
Goes back.
Jeff wins this round.
Ghostbusters is too, like, I can't even explain why it's not a
too
10
many
out of 10.
Ghosts.
I have like a 3 ghost limit in my 10
3
out of 10
ghost minimum.
I want to say Goofy, but I'm not allowed to say that word.
But
anymore.
It's supposed to. It's
so you're saying a Goofy movie is a 10 out of 10?
Yeah, Goof Troop.
Goof Trip.
That was a television show.
Goof Trip, everyone.
Fargo. That's a comedy.
Yeah, but that's this. There's some stuff that is not great about
Fargo. I oddly don't have any Coen Brothers movies on my list, and I love the Coen Brothers, but I don't have...
That's the weird... Oh, I mean, with Paul Thomas Anderson, I was debating because There Will Be Blood's not old enough yet to be a 10 out of 10, but...
It's kind
of...
Yeah.
It's a 10 out of 10, come on.
There Will Be Blood is a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
So you guys both... there has to be a fucking movie that all three of us agree on.
I thought we just did.
Ghostbusters. No, we all agree on Ghostbusters.
You don't think There Will Be Blood's a 10 out of 10?
So There Will Be Blood is the cut print film, greatest movie of all time.
Sure.
Yeah.
If we have to pick one, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, we all agree on that.
You could do worse than that.
Yeah.
Could pick B-Season.
That's a ringing endorsement. You could do worse.
Yeah, you could do worse. Cut print film. That's the Paul quote.
We're really committed. Our heart's in it.
Do you like The Shining more than There Will Be Blood?
No.
No?
No.
Me neither.
I don't think I like anything more than There Will Be Blood.
I do. I like Apocalypse Now more.
Not even Oxygen?
Well, I like Oxygen. I was like H2O as well.
Not even alcohol?
I like that a little more than Oxygen. It's a disease. It runs in my family. The alcoholism joke.
Okay, so There Will Be Blood... 2001, Apocalypse Now. These are the best movies ever, right, guys? I'm just going to list all my movies.
This seems a little biased.
What, did anyone have Alien on their list?
No. Yeah, Alien's a fucking 10.
There you go.
Mm.
Oh, so it's settled. Alien is...
I just didn't want to be the fucking Alien kid. Like,
I have Alien on my list.
It's...
That's my Alien.
Dave's
list.
Having a fit. Here, bite my wallet.
Put your wallet under your tongue.
Is that a thing?
I don't know.
Wallets? Okay.
Yeah.
It's a game I like to play with my boss.
Yeah, I often just put wallets in people's mouths.
Dustin goes to jail. That's the,
Dustin.
Who's Dustin?
Dustin.
Dustin checks in. That's what I was thinking of.
Also, that's Dunstan, not Dustin. Dustin Hoffman goes to
Hello,
jail.
Hello, everybody. This is gold.
Is there a perfect Dustin Hoffman movie? No.
I have All the President's Men on my list. He's in that.
Mm.
You guys... The President's Men?
The one about Watergate. And...
There's like 75 movies on your list, isn't there?
No. Probably like 10. No. 11.
11 tens.
What? You don't like All the President's Men? Fuck you.
I like a few of them.
To quote one of our fans, fuck you.
Okay, you guys ready for the recommendations?
Yeah, let's
Absolutely.
Do this.
Absolutely.
I just met you, and this is crazy. So here's my Cuphead Film Weekly movie recommendation. Watch it, maybe.
Well, that would be the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
I'm hyperventilating.
Wow. We're laughing at
you know what?
Jokes.
We probably shouldn't listen to those things cold.
Yeah. They've never heard that before.
I literally felt all the breath
in
my
God.
Lungs. Oh, my God.
Okay. Who's going first here?
I'll go first All because right. mine directly relates to Perfect 10 movies.
Okay.
It's the documentary Milius.
What is it, Milius?
Milius, about John Milius.
Who him?
Who be John Milius?
Yeah, who him?
He directed Conan the Barbarian.
Not only that, but he's written pretty much every good scene you've ever watched in your life. He was part of that.
Seems like a blanket statement.
Well, every scene, even in real life, not just movies.
He was part of the, I guess it's the early Rat Pack of directors. Is that a good term to use?
No, but go with it.
Yeah. Okay, so there was...
There were more muskrats than actual rats.
The muskrat pack, I'll
There
go
was
with that.
Spielberg, mm-hmm. Lucas,
Coppola.
Scorsese, Coppola, and who's the other one? Malick.
This is your thing.
And John Milius.
U-Bowl.
Yes, U-Ball and Brett Ratner.
And John Milius, who's the name people don't remember because he was more of a writer.
Okay.
But his words are in all of their scripts. All
right.
I know he helped Lucas write American Graffiti. But it's a documentary about his life and everything he's done. And I guess it exists because people don't know who he is, and they should. But he wrote the the what's it called, the in USS Indianapolis scene in Jaws.
Oh my god, that's the best scene of the whole fucking movie. All right, well, I'm gonna watch it. Jesus.
But they were such good. He's kind of like an Ernest Hemingway type character. Mm. He's real like commanding and crazy.
He's real manly is the word you would use. Like, he's really into.
Yeah, he's like he's very masculine. Yeah. That's how I would say.
And he shot the top of his head off with a shotgun.
Not yet. He's still alive.
Oh.
Spoiler.
documentary spoiler.
But the craziest story, I'm trying to think of the craziest story from the movie. But one of the coolest stories from the movie was that he made a movie called Big Wednesday, which was a surfing movie.
Mm.
At the same time that.
Was it a 10 out of 10?
No.
Was it a hang 10 out of 10?
This guy, he's not a director. He directed Red Dawn.
Oh, all
right. Wrote and directed it, right?
Yeah, he's a better writer than director.
Anyway, he. At the same time, Spielberg was making Close Encounters and Lucas was making Star Wars.
Mm.
Milius was making this surfing movie called Big Wednesday. And they were such close friends that they swapped gross points on all of their movies.
Oh, wow.
So he has
I think he made out of the deal.
That's the thing. There's like a joke where Spielberg's like, I'm still waiting for my Big Wednesday money. But apparently he wrote that USS Indianapolis scene over the phone to Scorsese.
Because
Scorsese
amazing.
Called him up and was like, look, I need something. And he wrote 10 pages over the phone to Scorsese.
It's
on Netflix.
Talent.
And right. it's worth watching, especially for people who are into film like these three dudes.
Yeah.
He also wrote Apocalypse Now, which is on your list. So there you go.
He can't, perfect. That was the story I wanted to tell where he said hippies. He hated hippies, and they were all wearing buttons that said Peace Now. So he just changed it to Apocalypse Now. That's where the name came from, and I was like, oh, shit.
All right, I have to watch this.
Yeah, it's worth watching.
Yeah, I put it in my queue.
Mm-hmm.
Queue it up.
I will queue that shit up.
What do you got, Chris?
Who's next?
Whoosh! Is this Chris's pick?
I have the 1977 film Sorcerer. This recently got a new Blu-ray release, and a lot of people are talking about the Blu-ray, and rightfully so, because it's a fantastic movie. And it's a fantastic Blu-ray. Basically, William Friedkin, who directed, you know, The Exorcist and The French Connection and Jade, which
is terrific movie.
But it's like this is a gritty existential movie where basically it's about these four guys from different parts of the world, and they're all criminals, and they all basically commit some sort of crime, and they end up in South America. Like living on the lam. Mm. And they all get hired to take two trucks through the jungle carrying nitroglycerin.
Oh, wow.
So basically, it's about these four guys who just have nothing to lose, and they're driving through the jungle carrying explosive trucks. And it's fucking.
So it's a road trip movie.
It is a fantastic. Roy Scheider is in it. He's the main guy, and it's a fantastic movie. And this Blu-ray is fucking beautiful. Basically, the movie was out of print for years. And they recently put out this new, you know, high-end Blu-ray, and it's fantastic. I watched it the other night. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful movie.
All right.
Sorcerer.
All right. My pick is, I could do the whip noise again.
Sorry.
One more time.
I can't help it.
All right. My pick is Shotgun Stories. It's you never saw that?
No.
It's
never even heard of it.
Came out in 2007. It's starring Michael Shannon. And it's directed by Jeff Nichols, who you may have heard from a little film called Take Shelter.
I love that movie.
He also directed Mud.
Take Shelter. Which
That's
one was
another
that?
Michael Shannon movie.
Okay, that was the one where he had like the weird
visions of the the end of the world.
I will find you. Yeah, that's from Take Shelter.
So yeah. Anyway, Shotgun Stories is about the story of it's a Midwest family. And this man, who's the father, he dies, and he had two families. He started this one family, and he abandoned them, and he had three sons. And he went to live with his other woman and started another family with her in the same town. But he actually stayed with this woman and raised another set of sons and loved them and cared about them. So when he dies, all hell breaks loose. There's like a family feud over... like, who gets what.
When does it take place?
It's like modern
times.
Yeah. But it takes place in the Midwest. So, like, they're dirt. Everybody's dirt poor. It is such a fantastic movie. It's the first time I saw Michael Shannon in anything. And he's the star. He plays the oldest son of the family that got the shaft.
Oh, so you didn't just watch this, right?
No, I watched this a couple years ago. Michael Shannon plays Son. That's his name.
His name's just Son.
S-O-N. And his little brother, Boy. And his youngest brother, Kid.
Nice.
Yeah,
that reminds me of Blood Meridian, kind of.
Yeah, kind of, like, they were so worthless to this father that died. That
he didn't even name them.
They're not even named. So it's so good.
Do you say it was directed by the guy who directed Mud, or?
Yes, directed by the guy that did Mud and Take Shelter, which also stars
Have you
Michael
seen Mud?
Shannon. I have not seen Mud yet.
That's a good movie.
But Take Shelter is fantastic, and I don't know if this was this guy's first movie or what.
It was.
It's so good. You have to. It was on Netflix a few years ago. That's when I first saw it. I don't know if it's still there.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that out because Mud was awesome. It was kind of like E.T. but with.
I'm gonna have to check it out.
Matthew McConaughey instead of an alien.
That's interesting.
All right, I think we got to get some plugs in, right?
Yeah, let's do some plugs.
Check out some podcasts on More Like Radio. You can check out Total Radio Meltdown.
Yeah.
Or High Society.
It's very hot in that studio. their skin's melting.
And there's like a siren going off the whole time.
Yeah,
it's kind of hard to listen. It's like.
All of this is horseshit. We have no proof of what we're saying.
Also, check out High Society Radio with Chris Stanley and Fred from Brooklyn.
Oh.
It's a good fucking podcast.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're funny.
I also want to plug Papa's Basement. Have you followed this guy on Twitter?
No.
Because it's
The company account follows him.
Okay, so do I. My personal account does. He tweets some absurd things. Like, shit that I can't even believe he thought of. It's very funny.
Papa's
Basement on More Like Radio.
Who's coming up after us? Conti and Kenny?
Yes. Who are also good.
And also check out Anti-Fanboy at antifanboy.com.
And Joystick Jerks.
So just...
You know.
Listen to us first.
Three times. Listen to us thrice.
Go to our website, which is cutprintfilm.com.
That's right.
And read all the articles.
Because there are a lot.
Yeah, we write a lot.
And if you have time left over.
There's three of us, and we write a lot. I'm serious. A lot.
Yeah.
It's not like we have jobs or anything.
A little too much.
I'm writing now.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah.
If Chris doesn't have any plugs.
No.
All right.
I have hair plugs, but...
They look great. I meant to tell you that.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.
See ya.
Please go to cutprintfilm.com for more movie reviews, opinions, and original articles about the movies we love and hate. And be sure to subscribe to the Cutprint Film Podcast on iTunes. I'm Moon Man, signing off until next time.